Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Jeremy Lehner. Jeremy is the Senior Vice President of Sales at Providence Medical Technology, and we discuss some lessons that he's learned in his career, and we also discuss his book, The Point Guard Approach, where he offers insight into what it takes to be a leader at work and at home. Looking forward to today's conversation with Jeremy. It's great to have Jeremy joining us, and I was telling you I'm jealous because you're sitting in an outdoor location, and I'm here in Minneapolis, and I just looked at my my weather. It says 42, so I'm not going to do mine outside today. So appreciate you joining us for this this week's podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. And yeah, I won't tell you about the 72 and climbing here in DFW and the nice sun. I won't rub that in at all, Mark.
Oh, so thanks for that. Don't worry. Not rubbing it in. Well, tell us a little bit about your background, just a quick flyover of your career, and we'd definitely love to hear people's stories and kind of how they started out and kind of how they got to where they are today.
Yeah, no, happy to do so. So maybe an unconventional or not traditional way into where I've eventually landed, which was medical devices. I didn't know that existed when I was growing up, with no exposure to kind of healthcare or medical sales at all. I grew up in Pennsylvania, went to Slippery Rock University, and I was an athlete growing up. So I played lots of sports, but really focused in on basketball. Had a real love for basketball and also soccer, but was lucky to have some opportunities to play in college. And I ended up going to Slippery Rock University in Western PA. And was a sports management, business administration, major, minor. I did do a little pre-physical therapy. So I was kind of interested in the human body and fixing it after, injury and that type of thing, because I had been through a few injuries as an athlete. But, ended up moving down to Tampa, Florida, and pursued an internship out of college with Major League Soccer, which at the time, and I'll date myself, but 96, 97, the league just started. So MLS was a brand new startup. Sure. And was really fortunate to take on an internship. They offered me a full-time role, and I started in ticket sales. And my first job out of college was selling tickets to soccer matches and, going business to business, trying to sell large group packages, that type of thing. But, it really was my first foray into sales and sports management, I had kind of a focus. So I thought I wanted to be in pro sports and I did it for three seasons, I guess, with the team, learned a ton, loved it. But also thought there might be some more out there for me and, went on to do a little bit of, sports marketing with a small firm out of Tampa. We did a national golf tournament for Playboy magazine of all clients, but it was a really neat experience as well. Did that for, I think a year or two, and then found my way into pharmaceutical sales. And, that really kind of changed the entire trajectory for me, was going from kind of the sports and B2B sales, advertising sales, to this whole realm of medical sales, which I knew really nothing about. Had an uncle that was an anesthesiologist, had told me a little bit about some of the reps he interacted with, and that if I enjoyed sales, like this was something maybe I wanted to take a look at. There's always new tech coming out. And I started in pharma and Cardinal Health, which is a huge healthcare industry provider. We were a very small division within Cardinal, but we did unique things. We built sales teams for companies that didn't have them. So it wasn't a traditional Pfizer, Eli Lilly model. It was really, we were this large healthcare company, but our division built sales teams for small up and coming biotech and pharma companies that didn't have the capital or the desire to build their own sales team. So I got to see firsthand what it was like to kind of build teams from the ground up and customize those. And I think as I look back, that was really instrumental in helping me understand you know, just kind of team dynamics along with the hiring, the performance management, the, you know, termination, all those things that go into, you know, startup to, you know, enterprise level sales teams. Started as a sales rep and then got my first management opportunity in kind of my late 20s, which was, I guess, looking back, was pretty young. But I worked for Cardinal for 6 years, great run. They divested that division. I had now made a network, and one of the contacts I had said, you really need to look at medical devices and surgical, you know, getting into the surgical environment, into the hospital. There's tons of technology there. There's lots of opportunity, both financially, but also from an upward mobility standpoint. And, you know, I think I did a kind of a ride along with a guy in Tampa, went into like a cath lab, and I was like, man, this is really neat. Like we're right here in the action. And I kind of likened it to pharmaceuticals was feeding the lion outside of the cage. You kind of threw the meat into there. In medical device sales, you were in the cage with the lion, you know, and it was just really exciting. And that took me to a couple startups. One was called TissueLink at the time, and started a new territory in Tampa, Florida. I was really fortunate to work with some just super talented people. And that run of about 6 years was, call it a couple million in sales, to eventually being acquired by Medtronic, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, medical device company, 6 years later for, you know, over $500 million. And seeing what high growth looked like, going from a handful of reps to, I want to say when I left, 200 plus sales reps, full management team, and just really, really transformative experience. I worked my way up from a sales rep in Florida to a regional manager in California to an area vice president for the Western US. And when we, you know, when I eventually left Medtronic, you know, I was managing a really large team, big book of business, and just a tremendous experience. Follow that with a little stint in software sales to round me out. I always was interested in software, but did a software startup called Fat Cloud. That was really interesting. Very short lived, about a year and a half. We ran out of funding, but learned a lot there. And then went into spine hardware sales. Did another 5-6 year stint with a company called Paradigm Spine. We launched a product called Coflex. Real breakthrough technology in the treatment of lumbar spinal stenosis. Worked with one of my old mentors, eventually become the vice president of sales there, but really got into the kind of the spine, neurospine, orthopedic spine hardware space. And it's a little bit niche-y, so I had to learn a lot really quickly. We were very successful, and it was a great run, which led me to where I've been now for the last 7+ years. Which is Providence Medical Technology, where I'm the senior vice president of global sales. And again, just so lucky to work with some incredibly talented people, a amazing technology that really helps patients, really can change a surgeon's ability to treat a portion of their patient population much more effectively. And we just took it through an IDE trial, and luckily I've been involved in a few of those as well. So with that, maybe a long way around. That's where I'm sitting now, and you know, 4 kids later, and you know, seated here in Dallas, Texas. We've been here for just over 10 years or 11 years now. So, been quite a journey.
Yeah. Well, if you were to go back and talk to that 22-year-old who knew everything at that point, as all 22-year-olds know everything, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give a 22-year-old Jeremy?
One would be, you know, what you don't know is way bigger than what you do know you don't know and what you actually know. And that, you know, being really, really curious, I think luckily I was naturally very curious, but being really curious, really open to, you know, avenues that you would never understand or maybe even explore, but just being really open-minded and curious is going to be such a great attribute to allow yourself that what could be a really exciting journey if you'll do that. I think understanding that, you know, experience, you can't replace that. And there's just some things you just got to go ahead and go through. And the grind of that is okay. And you may not be where you want to be at a given moment in time, but eventually that cumulative effect of that experience really pays off. And you don't have to rush that process. Try and enjoy every step of that process. you know, have long-term goals, have an objective in mind, but really buy into the steps along the way and don't try and rush that to get to the next promotion or get a certain pay level or things of that nature. And I think the other big one would just, your network's really important. Take care of the people that take care of you and go out of your way to assist others, because it just comes back, you know, in spades, and you really get a lot out of giving. And I think when you're young, you don't maybe understand that as much. And that not only intrinsically you just feel good, but when you help other people, you know, eventually that karma does really circle around, and you know, you'll reap the rewards later on. But if you have that mindset, I think that's really important. And I don't know that I did or didn't, but I think looking back, that's something I would have maybe highlighted for myself to consider a little bit more.
Well, you wrote a book, and I think a lot of people say someday I'm going to write a book. Talk a little bit about that process of deciding, and then we want to talk about, it's entitled The Point Guard Approach, and love to hear kind of the backstory of that. And we definitely want to dive into some of the points that you make in that book.
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting part is there are a lot of people, including myself, said, man, it'd be really cool to write a book, fiction, nonfiction, all these things. And I wasn't trained as a, you know, I didn't major in English, and, you know, I like reading, but yeah, you know, I didn't really know where I wanted to go, but I had some ideas and they were brewing for a while. And it took this one dinner. I was with a customer of ours who was an orthopedic spine surgeon, and we were in Houston, and he said, at the time blogging was really hot. Remember, blogging had just like was blossoming, and he was blogging a lot about, you know, the life of an orthopedic spine surgeon and the diseases he treats and how to build a practice. And he had a collection of these blogs that eventually a publisher came to him and said, if we can, you can organize these in a way, and over the next 90 days, give him 90 days, get this organized, and we want you to add a few things to this, this, and this. We'll help publish this. We'll do like a co-publish together. And I just thought that was so interesting that a spine surgeon could do that. And I said, if he can do this, I definitely have the time to do it. And you know, I'm traveling at this point. I was a VP of sales. I was traveling literally every week somewhere in the country. I'm doing 150,000 miles a year domestically. And I just said, I'm not going to compromise the time I have with my family to do it. So one of the big decisions was like, how do I get started? And so I did some research. I talked to him, of course, and some other people that I knew had been published, and, you know, built kind of a framework. And it took me a lot longer than it should have, I guess. But over the course of the next 3 years, I was writing on planes, trains, and automobiles. And I built an outline, very traditional, just like you would, just like chapters that I thought would work. And eventually came up with a manuscript that was reasonable, about 24,000 words, and started to figure out, how do you shop that? What are the next steps? And, we can dive into that as you want to, but, eventually found a publisher, and we moved forward into the editing process. And, you know, that was about another year till we actually, published. And I think late 2021 is when The Point Guard Approach actually, you know, hit the print. And it's been a great, you know, it's really neat is that once you write the book, it's there forever. So, you know, some people say, you know, did you do a lot of promotion around it? It's like, no, we kind of got it out there, and we sold some books along the way. And we did a book signing just recently at a local bookstore, which was really interesting. And I do podcasts here and there, and all of our new hires that come into our organization get a copy of The Point Guard Approach. And it's really fun. It's a nice, it's a nice attribute to have. And for my own legacy, for my kids, as I'm aging now, it's nice to have something that they can always look back on.
So the title, talk a little bit about that, and just, you know, I know the book is about leadership and decision-making, but talk a little bit about that, just kind of how you approached it as far as the topic and the title.
Yeah, so there's two things I seem to kind of know a little bit about, more so than maybe other things in my life, and that was basketball, and that was leadership. And, you know, the point guard approach, in short, was really this, drawing on this really neat correlation that I found looking back, that there's a lot of principles and kind of a pillars in my career that I leaned on, that I was kind of doing naturally, but I think enhanced, that I was doing on the basketball court. And I saw modeled with great leaders around me. And I saw with great teammates that I had, or people that I really looked up to. And the point guard approach was really this concept that whether you like basketball, it doesn't really matter. It has nothing to do with really sports. And I just use this correlation for me because it's something I knew a lot about and drawing on these parallels. But it's really the thought process of how do you create a framework for yourself to hold yourself accountable and get the most out of the opportunity in front of you, which is really your life. But as a business person, which I know is a very general term, and it wasn't written in the context for medical device sales or a, you know, this type of leader or that type of leader, is really just a general business person, and even maybe beyond that a little bit to how you might approach life. But what are things that I felt were really valuable and important that I learned, you know, maybe through my experiences playing basketball, that worked really, really well as a, you know, as a business person, as a father, as a leader.
So talk a little bit, I know you talk about vision and awareness. Talk a little bit about that topic and how that as a leader, it's important to have both, but kind of unpack that a little bit for us.
Sure. You know, I think without vision, and vision in the sense of, you know, imagine if I could just kind of draw a picture to a kid, you've seen this probably before at a park where they don't have good ball handling skills. So their head's down when they dribble, right? And they just do. Or if you've seen a basketball game and they just don't see what's happening on the court. They're just really focused on making sure that ball comes back up to their hand and they get to some position or place, but they're missing the whole game. And when you see, like last night was the NCAA championship, and I'm not sure if you watched it or not, but I mean, these guys are so talented, but they don't look down. It's the whole time that the guards, the forwards, doesn't matter if you're a point guard or not, their heads are up because they got to see what's going on the court. You have to have that awareness around you of what's happening or you miss it. And I think, you know, one of the foundational elements of being any kind of leader or even furthermore, just an individual contributor, you got to have your head up. You got to see what's going on around you in the market. What are the opportunities around you? And then, you know, that awareness component to me is so important for leaders is self-awareness. Also as a, you know, a professional salesperson, knowing who you're with, who you're around, having the emotional intelligence to be kind of regulating how you are acting within the environment that you're in and making sure that you're approaching, you know, each situation differently and really pairing where you're supposed to be from kind of a energy level, as well as just, you know, who's your audience and that type of thing. So, you know, vision is a huge, huge attribute for any, you know, any kind of individual contributor or leader. Yeah. It's something you can work on, you know, like, are you seeing the whole opportunity? Are you, you know, are you listening to podcasts with other people? Are you reading books? You know, are you kind of fixated on the thing that you really know and you're comfortable with, or are you able to kind of get your head up and look around and see what's out there?
Yeah, that's good. So a lot of our listeners are either first time leaders, there have been individual contributors, and now are in a leadership role and now are having to lead teams. Talk about the importance of communication as a leader. I know that's one of your areas you cover as far as in communicating well to the teammates and making sure the team is on the same page.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the single most important, you know, skill set that a leader could have would be effective communication, right? And that doesn't mean you have to be loud, boisterous, overwhelming, you know, the high, super high energy person. I think sometimes a little bit subdued is okay. And you hear about and read about great CEOs and leaders that, and coaches even, that have just done amazing things with, while building teams. They're just really good at one-on-one communication, right? They know how to enroll the group, but they build tremendous trust on, you know, on the individual basis. So communication, from the standpoint of a kind of a young or newer leader and leading a team, I think you can think about it really practically in kind of, you know, two or three buckets. One being, how do you communicate effectively to within the group environment and command you know, the respect and enrolling everybody in kind of the vision you're trying to establish, or what are the goals that we're trying to accomplish, and we're all on the same page and aligned. But also, how do you effectively communicate on the one-on-one? How do you create trust? How do you build relationships that are meaningful? And you have to care. You have to be, that's authenticity, right? If I really need to care about you, if you're working for me, Mark, is I want to get to know you. I want to see, you know, how do you tick? What makes you move? What makes you motivated? What really turns you off? What are things that, you know, you may not like being applauded in front of the rest of the team? Some people don't like that. That makes them feel uncomfortable. You may thrive on that. Hey, Mark just did this great thing on this last sales call we were on. I want to tell you guys all about it. And you're just like pumped, right? So the only way I can find that out is, you know, getting to know you, working with you, being curious. We talked about that earlier. And I think authenticity is a big part of that. People see through communication that's not true, right? I think generally people in business are typically pretty intelligent. They've got good awareness. And when they hear something and they start to pick up on somebody that's not authentic, even people that are really good at it, they eventually that breaks down, the trust goes way down. And I think communication then becomes more and more challenging. So, you know, building that trust, being authentic, can you communicate in the group environment? Can you communicate in the individual one-on-one environment effectively? Those are things that I would consider as a new leader to really kind of hone in on and think about as they make that transition.
You talk about adaptability and quick decision-making. And I think in our world that's moving so quickly and things changing, technology and everything, talk about the importance of that and how do you navigate, again, making great decisions, but doing it quickly?
Stuff, you know, I think we're moving at, things are moving at light speed now. Like I'm trying to integrate, how do I use AI on a daily basis? Because if I don't, I'm going to be left behind. I'll be a dinosaur, right? And sure. It's hard. You got to do the work to get into these technology flows and integrate things. And I think a little bit about being humble too, right? Like the things that you did 5 or 6 or 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago that really worked well, they're probably outdated. Some of them aren't, but you know, a lot of those tricks are, you know, something, things change really quickly. And you have to be humble enough to understand that if I'm not adapting, if I'm not growing, if I'm not willing to try new techniques, I'm going to be left behind. So, I mean, flexibility, adaptability are so important as a leader, as an individual contributor. I think even as organizations these days have to be really flexible, even, you know, big, large enterprises, multi-billion-dollar cap companies need to be able to flex and move and change quicker than they ever have. So, you know, as far as decision making goes, one of the things I believe's worked fairly well for me is, you know, surround yourself with really good people, and sometimes it's people that aren't like you, and getting diversity on your team and getting people with a different thought process or different approach really bodes well, because when you lean on them, decision making can come faster because they just come from a different, you know, different viewpoint, different perspective, and they're going to allow you to kind of open up some doors or corridors that maybe you wouldn't go down or explore because you just don't have that naturally in your, you know, purview. So, you know, really good people around you makes decision making, quick decision making easier. Sometimes you just, as a leader, you have to make executive decisions and you live or die by those. And knowing that you're going to make some mistakes is okay, right? You got to give yourself a little bit of room there, because if you're trying to move really quickly, you don't have that time to evaluate in depth. And sometimes that's okay, you know, but I think the big piece there is building teams around you that can really help with that process, you know, proves wildly valuable.
So the idea about kind of the team first mentality of how do you balance kind of the personal contributions that each person is trying to get, you know, trying to achieve something, but how do we balance that with the kind of the team needs and helping each other and collaborating and all the those words that get thrown around a lot that, you know, it's like, how does that actually work? But maybe give us a story of maybe a team that you led that maybe were a bunch of individuals, but they weren't really a team. They were just kind of doing their own things and they weren't being effective.
Yeah, I think most of the time as a leader, when you start, you're either inheriting a team, meaning that you've been recruited in or you've joined an organization that's got some established pieces in place. And maybe I'll talk about that, names and timeframes can stay anonymous, but, and this has happened to me numerous times, but you join and you've got kind of the crew that's there, the established team. And in the context I'm coming from is, managing, leading salespeople, sales leaders, that type of thing. And, they've got things that have worked really well for them, the thoughts and beliefs that they hold true. And you're now the new person trying to enroll them in maybe, hey, those are great. A lot of things you did got us to where we're at, but to where we're headed, we're going to need a different mindset and a different approach. And I think that's what separates really great leaders from those that are mediocre or not so good, is how can you enroll everybody in a vision that they buy into and that they're willing to sacrifice maybe even their own, some of their own commission dollars or recognition for the betterment of the team or the organization. And that's really hard. And, and I think that's a much longer conversation, but I'll go back to, and it may sound repetitive, but if you can build trust pretty quickly, if you can build rapport, your title doesn't demand anything. People have lots of titles, CEO or president, or that doesn't mean people are going to follow you or lead you follow your leadership. I think where they buy into you is that they trust you. They believe in the vision. They believe that you've got their best interests in mind. And they know inherently that, look, you've got an objective to hit, especially as a kind of a sales leader or any kind of GM role where you need to, the bottom line matters in business and you've got to deliver results. So there's always that fair balance. But if you are transparent and authentic and you can get the team to buy into what you're doing, they're willing to sacrifice and they'll go out of their way to do things that matter, not just for them, but for the betterment of the team. And that's when you know your culture shifted. And I can remember specifically times where, early in an organization where you've got some buy-in, but you just don't have it all there yet. And you've got some outliers and you find yourself, in conversations that maybe are adversarial or you're having to turn people over. And then you find that sweet spot where things start to really click and success does a lot for people. When they start to have success, when the team's doing well, people buy in. So you do, as a leader, have to find ways to get to that success window, sometimes quicker, because once you get that taste, everybody starts to say, hey, this is working. I see it now. I believe in it. And in addition to them believing in you, they're seeing the results. And that's really gratifying for everybody. And then, you command not only respect, but you build credibility. And once you have that credibility, you have the ability to ask for more of people and ask for more sacrifice. And I think when everything's hitting stride is that, you're not getting second guessed too often when you ask for something that may seem a little bit farther off the reservation, because you built that credibility, you built that trust, right?
So you mentioned that, you continue to read and you've written a book, but you're reading other authors and growing as a leader. What are some books that you would put on a leader's list of books to read?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, there's so many great ones, but a couple come to mind. One I'll give you is actually very practical, which we found really impacted the way we were able to communicate, especially in the written sense, like emails. Was Smart Brevity. I don't know if you're familiar with the book Smart Brevity, but the framework they use is really effective, especially at the rate at which we are all communicating and how many emails go back and forth, et cetera. I found that book to be really, really valuable for our team to not write 10, 20 paragraphs, but be able to condense things into ways that are very palatable, actionable, and you can move pretty quickly with. So, I would recommend that to to anybody, because I think that one's really, you know, really, really good one. The other one, The Motive by Patrick Lencioni.
Okay.
Yep. Love that for a leader. He does a nice job of doing fable. It's kind of a fable experience where, you know, he's kind of talking about two different CEOs and how they approached a problem. And it takes you through that. And so, and I like, he's got a lot of really good work, you know, from professional development standpoint. And then one that is just kind of the backbone, and I mentioned it earlier, is emotional intelligence, but Daniel Goleman, Working with Emotional Intelligence. I give that to any rep or any leader that hasn't read it as a recommendation, you know, every time. That's just, you know, foundational elements. And then obviously The Point Guard Approach, you know, you should have in your reading list. Yeah. And there's many others, but I think those are a good starting point.
Yeah, that's great. So any favorite quotes that you like to refer to?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, let's see. I love one that I just used in my closing of a national sales meeting is, you know, I think it was Voltaire, but other people may quote it too, is no plan withstands initial contact with the enemy. No plan withstands initial contact with the enemy. And that goes to that flexibility, the humbleness, is that, you know, no matter how well you plan and how out in front you are, you got to have contingencies, because as soon as the plan starts, inevitably something is different than you expected, and you have to be humble enough and flexible enough to make that change. So I love that one. I also like, I was reading a book the other day that Andy Rooney said, everyone wants to live on top of the mountain, but all the happiness and growth occurs while you're climbing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's different ways, I think, to say that one, but, you know, I think it's back to, you'd ask me as kind of advice for a younger version of myself is, you know, the process and the journey is really where the special stuff is. Mm-hmm. And be in the moment, right? And just enjoy that process, good, bad, and ugly. And there's so much to learn, so much wealth in your journey.
So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
Big believer in exercise, just generally. And I like cross training, meaning lots of different things. You know, avid runner, started running after college basketball, and, you know, just my wife and I love to run. So, and it's easy because you can get out and get a lot of endorphin release quickly in 20 minutes, right? And I do that when I travel. It's a great way to see a place. So if you're in Cincinnati, if you're in Portland, if you're in Miami Beach, you know, get out and go run the streets. And you know, especially if you go early, you'll kind of see a city opening up. I think it's really neat. Love anything to do with the water. Just being on the water is super calming and peaceful for me. We lived in Tampa for years, so we were lucky to be in the Gulf of Mexico. Recently got my scuba license, so hoping to take advantage of that, but love to be, you know, whether it's fishing or, you know, anything on the water is just is great. And then, you know, having four kids, I coached basketball for the last, I don't know, 20 plus years. My older son, kind of had him come through an AAU team that we built here in the Dallas area. Now I've got a sixth grade son that's kind of doing the same journey. So coaching basketball is a ton of fun. And I enjoy working with the kids and competing in that regard. So those are big ones. And then, you know, I think now traveling with the family as they get older, it's really neat to experience different places with our kids and my wife.
Great. What parting advice would you give a new or up and coming leader?
You know, get a mentor, find somebody that, you know, you really admire. And you'll be so surprised that whether you know them, you've heard them on a podcast or read a book, so many people are really open to mentorship, and that comes in a lot of different ways. But, you know, I think reaching out to people within your network or getting outside of your network and finding some mentors that have done or, you know, not only done the role you're in now, but maybe are a few steps ahead of you, can just give you so much insight, some shortcuts, maybe spare you the pain of some mistakes that maybe you can avoid. I think that's a big one, is, you know, get rely on others. You're not in it alone. And give yourself a lot of room to make mistakes. I think as a young leader, that's a good thing, is take risks, you know, really, you know, get outside your comfort zone as much as you can and stay really, really curious and don't get complacent. It's probably the biggest one I see a lot of, especially in kind of sales pipeline where they went from rep to manager and then they just get really kind of complacent. And I think that's the time to really stretch yourself. Don't go backwards, but go, you know, pedal to the metal, get better, you know, get better as a salesperson, get better as a leader, and keep really driving yourself to improve.
Well, thanks, Jeremy. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you giving some insights. I know it's going to be helpful for those listening, and look forward to hearing your greater success as you grow in your career and continue to grow as a leader.
Thanks, Mark. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.